Hello and welcome to the Campus Police Social Hour Radio Show. Welcome back to the semester. We're going to continue our show as usual, where we left off. This is the show where we share public information about what's going on campuses, programs, and any other good things that we got going on here. Today, the show is going to be how we deal with and process sexual assault incidents and reports that come into the Campus Police Department. Today we have two special guests. The guest that we have is Detective Sergeant Kevin Fournier, and we have Detective Matt Weller that's going to be on the show with us today. The detectives are going to talk about the process and what their role is and how we assist our community in dealing with these situations. One thing to remember is our Campus Police Department patrols three college campuses: Hampshire College, Smith College, and Mount Holyoke College. So we have a large community, and our detectives move around on all three campuses dealing with different types of reports and investigations. So I'm going to leave the floor right now with Detective Sergeant Kevin Fournier so he can address the community and speak with you all. And also, if anyone wants to call into the show today, if you have any questions for either one of the detectives, that number is going to be 413-559-6766. Okay, so if you have any questions in regards to the topic today and you want to call in and speak with one of the detectives, please feel free to do so. And we will give you that number again during the break. So for now, how you doing, Detective Fournier?
Good. And yourself, sir?
I'm doing well. Basically, you know, you've been here before. You've given this information out to the three campuses. I posted stuff up. So I think it's an issue that we always have to address, and just to share with the campus community, because it's a tough situation when they have to come in and report these type of incidents to us. So today I figured you and Detective Weller can talk about that process and just let everyone know exactly what happens and how we are a resource to them.
Well, as you're probably aware, that someone who's been sexually assaulted, it's probably one of the most underreported crimes that you're ever going to have. And there's a variety of reasons for that. The survivor could feel guilt, could feel shame, could feel as if they're all alone. Doesn't really know which way to go. We have the responsibility for three campuses, as you mentioned before. We have Mount Holyoke, Hampshire, and Smith College. And as detectives, we get called in pretty much on all the major crimes that occur within the three campuses: high-end larcenies, violence crimes, things such as domestic violence institute situation, a harassment situation, and of course sexual assaults. It's really important that people know that we've had specialized training for this job. As detectives, there's a number of different courses that we have to take, along with the same courses our regular patrol officers would take. And there's a real sweeping movement among the our department and the Valley in general to get as many officers trained to be able to investigate and deal with sexual assaults Again, it is a very volatile thing and a very hard thing for somebody to come forward and report. I think coming forward is probably the hardest part of the job. From there, we can help you in a variety of different ways. We often have victims that come forward, and they don't know how it should be reported or when it should be reported. We've often seen cases where it's been a sexual assault that happened a year prior, months prior, the prior semester. Really important that you come forward as soon as possible. It's because of the evidence that can be gathered at that point in time. You know, another reason we have people who are concerned about reporting is if there have been alcohol or some type of drug involved, especially if they're underage. People have that false idea that we're going to be more interested in the fact that they're underage and been drinking than whether or not they've been sexually assaulted. This certainly is not the case. In fact, you're going to find in a lot of situations that alcohol or drugs have been used in the commission of a sexual assault. People don't realize that if you are intoxicated, you cannot consent to having any type of a sexual relation with another person. That is a very key point that comes up. If you are intoxicated, you can't consent. You can't tell them, yes, I was willing to go ahead and have sex. So you definitely become a survivor in that incident.
Okay, that's good. That's good information. One thing I want to ask, Kevin, as you guys being the detective, and I know you guys have special training around these type of issues, would you care to speak just a little bit to the audience about the type of trainings that you have as detectives in investigations around sexual assaults?
Absolutely. We attend sexual assault investigated courses, which are taught by the Municipal Police Academy. They bring in a variety of experts on a variety of different subjects, everything from evidence collection to interrogation techniques to experts in the law, particular chapters and sections. They also bring a vast amount of experience with them during the course, which gets transposed onto the people taking the course. In fact, Matt, you just finished a course not too long ago. Do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I went through the Municipal Training Academy training course for the basic sexual assault investigator course a couple weeks ago. And it's a full week-long course that we go to. It's a full 40 hours, and it's mandatory that you attend every single day. And they cover quite a variety of different things, just from the generic laws as well as if it has to involve a younger child, as well as an adolescent, all the way up to somebody who's considered a senior citizen, somebody with disabilities. We cover pretty much every single topic that we could ever come across. We go through everything from crime scene security to what the processes are, what kind of services we offer, and we'll be talking about that a little bit more in depth a little bit later on in the show.
Okay, great. It's really good for the public to know exactly, you know, the type of trainings that we do, what resources that they have here in the campus police department. Because what we find is, in some cases, people are afraid to approach us and to have these discussions. You know, in regards to the options, if someone comes to our department and they want to speak to a detective about a situation, tell us a little bit about the options that they have. I know there's a lot of questions around that. They feel that if they come to campus police, certain things are going to happen automatically. Can you talk about that just a little bit, what options they have when they report?
Absolutely. You know, the first thing that's of our primary concern is the safety and security of the survivor. And you hear me mention the word survivor instead of victim, because there is a difference. With a victim, it's a demeaning term. With a survivor, when you're sexually assaulted, we want not only to get you the services that are needed to survive the situation, to get you back into a good place, whether it's mentally, physically, so on and so forth across the board. if someone comes to our department and says, I want to talk to an officer, I want to talk to a detective because I've been sexually assaulted or something along that lines, people don't even always come out with those words. Matt and I are on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And typically what's going to happen, if they have a pretty good indication that it was a sexual assault, one of us will be called in to speak to you specifically on this subject. Sometimes it may take a little bit of time, half hour or so. We want you to be aware of that, but we definitely aren't going to leave you out in the dark. We're going to get you into a place of safety. There's certain things that we have to look at, and it has to do with territory and jurisdiction. If a sexual assault occurred somewhere outside of the three campuses that we're responsible for, we per se do not do the investigation. What we are going to do is we are going to put you in touch with the proper individuals, whether it's another campus, whether it's a town, whatever the case might do, and help facilitate you in being able to talk to a detective from that department. And we have gone, in some cases, transporting the individual to that department, making sure that they're set and good to go. We do that because if it didn't happen within our jurisdiction, we don't have police powers over the individual who may have sexually assaulted you. The next thing is people feel that if they come to the police immediately, that the case has to be criminally prosecuted, and that is not the case. One of the reasons why you want to report a sexual assault as early as possible, and by that I mean when you realize that it's happened to you, is so that evidence can be preserved. It doesn't mean that you have to criminally prosecute that person. We will never force anybody to do anything that they don't want to do. However, the evidence has a small window where it's available. And by evidence, we talk about a sexual assault nurse exam, so on and so forth. We want you to have all the options that are available. We've kind of preserved the evidence, freeze it in that point in time, and then you have a much longer time to decide what you want to do, because there's a lot of emotions and whatnot that are running through your head at that time. We want to make sure it's about you. We want to make you aware of what your choices are and the things that you can do, the services that are available through the Every Woman Center out of UMass, the counseling services on the campus, the counseling services outside of the campus, the medical treatment that's available, things such as the morning after pill, preventative for STDs, so on and so forth. There's a lot of things that we want to make sure happen at that particular point in time.
Okay, okay. Can you and Matt tell, just tell the audience also, once someone goes to the hospital, what is the process at this point? What happens next?
Well, once the survivor shows up at the hospital, what the hospital will be doing is they'll be contacting the SANE nurse. The SANE nurse is on call 24/7. There's always somebody available. And we have all the information on which hospitals are SANE certified. Some of them aren't, but they still can do the SANE kit. And pretty much what happens is you show up at the hospital. The hospital will get in contact with the SANE nurse coordinator, who will have a SANE nurse respond to that location. That could take anywhere from a half hour to 45 minutes. And then once the SANE nurse shows up, I believe the whole SANE procedure may take anywhere from 3 to 4 hours, give or take a little bit, depending on, you know, what the circumstances are in each specific case. And what the SANE nurse primarily does is look at the trauma, if there's any type of forensic evidence that can be obtained. So they'll be collecting clothing, they'll be swabbing for any traces of DNA or anything like that. And they pretty much put this all together in a kit for us. And once the SANE examination's done, the SANE kit comes back to the campus police department, and we hold on to it. One of the things that I want to kind of touch on is even if you don't report it to the campus police or the police in general, you can actually go to the hospital. I think Cooley Dickinson is an actual sane site. And you can go to the hospital, remain completely anonymous, and you can have the kit done on your own. Or you can come to the campus police office, and we can offer this, bringing you up to the hospital, having the sane kit done. We'll stay with you, as well as we can get in touch with an advocate and have an advocate go through the process with you. And one of the roles of the advocate is to offer emotional support for the victim, answer any questions that you might have, as well as lobby for the victim's rights. Kevin, do you have anything else that you want to add on this topic?
No, we hold on to the same kit for an indefinite amount of time. Typically, it's anywhere from 10 to 15 years where it's held in our custody in the property room. And then at that point in time, generally the survivors made that decision whether or not they want to go forward or not.
Okay, great, great. That's good information. All right, guys, let's take a short break. We let the audience listen to a little bit of music, and then we'll come right back. Again, you're listening to the Campus Police Social Hour. Today's date is February 13th, okay? And we really appreciate everyone tuning into the show. So just stay tuned. Listen to some music. Okay, welcome back to the Campus Police Social Hour. I hope you enjoyed the little bit of tools that we got there for you. I'm going to turn it back over to the detectives. A lot of good information. I hope a lot of you are tuning into the show. One thing I like to add, the show is always archived into the Yurt radio rotation, so you'll be able to hear these radio shows at different times as well. So I'm going to turn it over to Detective Weller.
So we covered quite a bit of information in the first little part of this segment that we're doing here today. And so what we really wanted to do was give you the definition of what a sexual assault really is. And a sexual assault is any kind of sexual contact, no matter how slight it is, of penetration that constitutes a sexual assault against your will. So if there's no consent given and there's any type of penetration or anything like that, that constitutes a sexual assault if it's unwanted. And what areas, you know, can that happen? We're seeing now in several cases that we've seen pop up is they think oral sex isn't sex, and you know, that doesn't constitute as a sexual assault or anything like that, when in fact it does. And you know, we've seen cases all over the place. You know, we've had quite a different demographic come in and talk with us, and we've seen cases, you know, where it's any type of relationship pretty much. So we've had you know, men and women, you know, women on women, men on men, you know, you name it, it, you know, we've seen it. So nothing can really shock us for any types of reports that come in. And so Kevin, would you like to talk a little bit about what the district attorney kind of has to offer and what our involvement is with that?
Well, you mentioned briefly that we've seen cases, men on men, women on women. In a survey of 412 colleges, it was found that 11.7% of gay or bisexual men and 30.6% of lesbian or bisexual women indicated they had been forced to have sex against their will at some point in their lives. So it isn't just a straight couple, a gay couple. It can happen to anyone. The district attorney's office, Matt and I, as well as Earl, are all members of the sexual assault response team that is sponsored through the DA's office in conjunction with a variety of other police departments, the DA, the Every Woman Center, or the Center for Women, as it's now being called. And they are focusing a new campaign specifically aimed towards the college community. And we'll be putting out some public service announcements. They're in the process of filming them and taping them now. And the theme for what they're going by is consent, the difference between sex and rape. And we keep getting back to that consent portion of it because that is the critical part when you're talking about a sexual assault. You know, we can talk about what the legal definitions are. And 1 in 4 college-age women report experiences that meet the legal definitions of rape or attempted rape. We see this across all the campuses. The problem is that fewer than 5% of attempted or completed rapes are actually reported to law enforcement. When we opened the show, we talked about how unreported this crime is. And 81 of on-campus, 84 of off-campus sexual assaults are not reported to the police. Again, it's all about you. It's about you being the survivor and being able to get through this incident and getting the things that you need to become whole again. We have a lot of options that can happen on a college community that can't happen in a municipal department. Most of our officers have worked, or some do work still, at municipal departments. We talk about, as I mentioned before, will we force you to criminally prosecute that person? It's never going to happen, not with us. You, as the survivor, sit in the driver's seat. Our purpose is to give you options of what are happening or what can happen. One of the options that can exist, for example, are to go before some type of community review board if it happens among students within the same campus. Some students feel that this is the proper way to go. Again, that's an option that you have available to you if you choose to go in that way. And we've seen some successful cases that we've had over the years where that's gone forward to some type of a judicial or community review board within the campus. We've had cases where we've documented everything, we've done an investigation and not gone forward at the survivor's request. Again, there's a variety of things. What we look at the onset of the incident is not whether or not you're going to prosecute, but the factors are you safe? Is it someone that you know? If it's not someone that you know, if it were an attack by an unknown individual, that puts the whole college community at risk, and our reaction has to be a little bit different. If it's someone you may have known as a first date, you know, when they're looking at statistics, normally about 35% of survivors were sexually assaulted by a fellow classmate, roughly 35% by friends, 25% by boyfriends or ex-boyfriends, and then about 3% were acquaintances, such as a situation where you have a date rape that occur. Again, there's a variety of things that come into play. We're treating everyone the same way, regardless of whether it's someone they know, they don't know. Again, safety is the primary concern. Matt, do you want to add to some of that?
The only thing that I want to add is you talked a little bit about the campus statistics, and now I'm going to give you a couple nationally statistics, which aren't too far off from the campuses. So for nationally, back in 2007 when they did this study, 1 in 6 women will experience a sexual assault in their lifetime. For men, it was 1 in 33. And over 75% of these victims, and this is nationwide, actually know their attacker. So back again, you know, it could be any family members, acquaintances, or any type of intimate partners. Because even if you're married or, you know, you're in a relationship with somebody and they force you to have, you know, sexual intercourse or, you know, objects or anything like that against your will, that's a sexual assault. So even if you're married to somebody and, you know, something happens and you're not feeling it tonight and they just force you, and then next thing you know, you're having some sort of some type of intercourse, you know, that still constitutes as a sexual assault by Mass General Law.
Okay, great, guys. That's a lot of information. Really good information for the community here. If everyone just stand by, we're going to take another short break, and we'll be right back with you. Again, Campus Police Social Hour.
Thank you.
Okay, we're back to Campus Police Social Hour. Hey, guys, I just have a question. This is something that I've had many students ask plenty of times. What exactly is a trespass order? Can you tell me a little bit about that?
So a trespass order is issued by the Campus Police Department from anybody from a patrol officer to detectives to all the way up to the chief, deputy chief. And what a trespass is a document that's given to an individual saying that they no longer want to be allowed on campus. So this, we can use this for many different tools, whether it's somebody that's, annoying behavior, or, suspected of just breaking in or causing a disturbance on campus. You know, they could be trespassed, and that would prevent them from coming back on campus or any campus property that is owned by the colleges. And we cover the three colleges. So if you trespass on one college, we can trespass them from all three just because of the whole PVTA bus system. It kind of interlocks all the campuses together, as well as with students taking classes on different campuses. It's a really good tool that we can use to help make people safe on campus. And so what happens when somebody's issued a trespass? This is a civil matter. So what happens is it doesn't go on their record or anything like that. And it's just a notification saying that they can't come back on campus or any college-owned property. And if they do come back on campus and for whatever reason we come across them, it makes them subject to arrest. And then it can go to the court system and work out that way. But it is only a civil matter. And, like I said, it's just one of those things, one of those tools that we have. So if you don't want to go criminally against somebody, yet we have enough to, kind of build up a report against them. You know, it's an added option that we have that we can, issue it to somebody. Kevin, is there anything else that I missed?
No, you pretty well summed it up. It's formally telling somebody that you are not allowed to be here. Simple as that. And then at that point in time, if they decide they're coming back, they can be arrested. But they've been told once. It won't show up on if someone does a background check on them for employment purposes or things of that nature. It's an internal record that's kept within the department.
Okay. Well, Kevin, how long does the trespass order last? Is there a certain end date on this trespass order if someone's feeling unsafe?
No, actually, the trespass order is in effect until such time as it's rescinded. They typically look at them every couple of years to see whether or not it's warranted, but we certainly want to leave it in effect as long as an individual is a student at the campuses.
Oh, okay. So that's great. That's great. Because I know there's been a lot of questions around trespass orders and what exactly are they. There's other protections that is offered through the police department as well. And I know not many people know about 209A orders. Can you talk about that as well?
Absolutely. There's a couple different protection orders that are out there. What you want to remember is we'll say you're a survivor of a particular incident, whether it be sexual assault or otherwise. A trespass notice keeps somebody from coming onto the campus. This is your home. You should feel safe in your home. And we want to make sure that you do. However, what it doesn't do is it doesn't protect you in other ways. It doesn't make it so the person can't contact you. It doesn't make it so the person has to give you your space when you're outside the campus. It really just is a somewhat of a bubble while on the campus itself as far as a notice of trespass goes. In extreme cases, we've done investigations on domestic violence issues as well as harassment prevention orders. The difference between the two of them, the domestic violence or the 209A, as you heard Earl mention, is typically for people who are in a substantial dating relationship. And that's pretty much determined by the courts. It can be husband and wife, boyfriend-girlfriend, boyfriend-boyfriend, girlfriend-girlfriend. It can be in-laws. In some cases, it can be people who are living in the house together. So there's a whole scope or a whole range of individuals that are included. But it's all based around that first premise that they are or were in a substantial dating relationship. What it does not cover is somebody that was in a situation where we'll say they were in a first date. You know, you often hear about date rape. And on this one date, a sexual assault occurs. That wouldn't be covered by a domestic violence restraining order because it misses the mark on the substantial dating relationship and the fear of great bodily harm or grievous bodily harm. However, in May 10th of 2010, the courts came out with an order called a harassment prevention order. And there are a couple different facets that are related around this. It's when somebody commits an act that's so heinous with the intent to cause great emotional harm towards you or to shock and annoy you in such a way that it would create great harm to you. It also includes a act of a sexual assault type, whether it is a rape, whether it is a forcible fondling, things of this nature. Now, you don't have to go forward with those charges in order to apply for a harassment prevention order or a domestic violence order, whatever is appropriate. However, the judge is the one ultimately that makes the final decision, decides whether it fits the criteria that he has to uphold to being a judge and what the Commonwealth has set up. We will assist you in the process of obtaining one of those orders or attempting to obtain one of those orders in the courts. We'll help transport you. We'll be your advocates. The court has certain advocates that do work on these type of things. And the difference between that and a trespass order is a harassment prevention order or a domestic violence restraining order. Both are meant to keep you safe from that other individual. It wouldn't allow them to call you, to text you, to leave voicemails on your phone, send you emails, come to see you in person. And they can't allow to have a third party or another person do that on their behalf. One of the issues that we see, though, is social media and the use of social media, especially things such as Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, so on and so forth across the board, where the individual who has the order feels as if it's being violated by the other individual because of posting. Quite often you see cases where a person will come up to you and say, well, I have a harassment prevention order against this individual, and they posted something on their Facebook site, and I know they're talking about me. You know, it says some people are just idiots and should get kicked, for example, just using a random phrase. It's not a violation of the order. And the reason it isn't is because they haven't sent it to the victim's Facebook page or whatever social media they're using. They can post whatever they want. They can do general expressions. The victim in these cases had to actually go on the other person's site in order to see it. Because of that, they haven't violated the order, the person whom the order is against. They just posted on their page and let the other person do the work. I tell people, shut down Facebook. Don't look at it. Don't let it rule your life, as a lot of people do have a habit of doing.
Okay, good information, Kev. Because we find that a lot of people have the Facebook pages, a lot of information's out there. And I know that you guys, as detectives, have dealt with maybe people coming in and maybe having some concerns in regards to Facebook and maybe MySpace as well. Maybe some complaints and concerns if someone's trying to contact them. So that's good information. The harassment order, how new is that, Kevin?
The harassment order came out on May 10th of 2010.
Okay, so that's just an added protection, and which is a real good resource to not only students, but faculty and staff here as well. I know in many cases we focus a lot on our student body, but we also have a lot of faculty and staff that works here in the community too. So all of these resources are available to them as well.
We actually, and you're right, Earl, that's a very good point to bring up. I mean, we typically talk about the student population, but quite often we're a resource to the faculty and staff as well on the campuses. And quite often we've helped them in a variety of pretty much some of the same situations as what we have here when we're talking about domestic violence and harassment orders and things of that nature.
Okay. You know, one thing, I just want to take it back because I really appreciate all the information. And again, if anyone has any questions, they can always call 559-6766. They can call right into the show and they can speak to either one of the detectives. Also, Kevin, I know your office is located over at Smith College. That is where the detective department is located. If you ever need to reach these officers, what is your extension, Kevin, to reach you?
My direct line is area code 413-585-2493.
Okay. And Detective Weller, you're right there in the same location. You have contact information as well?
Yeah, my direct line, if you want to get in contact with me, is area code 413-585-2496. And because we have the three colleges, sometimes we're out of the office, you know, going around campus to campus. Sometimes we're at Hampshire, sometimes we're at Mount Holyoke, sometimes we're out meeting somebody over at Smith College and talking with them. So sometimes it's kind of hard to get a hold of us. Usually we're there quite often. But if you can't get a hold of us, you can just contact our central dispatch, which is area code 413-538-2304. And you can always ask to talk with a detective, and they can get in contact with us. Or they can take a note for you, and we can get back to you as soon as we can if we're tied up dealing with something.
And you probably know the number 559-5424 as being the campus police here at Hampshire College. Our dispatchers handle the calls for all three campuses, so we encourage you to call whatever number you're familiar with, whether it's the 559-5424 number here from Hampshire, the Mount Holyoke number, which is 538-2304, or the Smith number, which is 585-2490. In either case, it all goes to the same centralized dispatch center, and they're able to get a hold of us no matter where we are. Our offices are Smith, but it just means that's where we kind of hang our coats and do the reports, and we're constantly on the move to whatever campus needs us the most, and it depends on the situation that's going on.
Okay, that's good. That's good. That way it doesn't confuse them when they get the three different numbers. And the reason why we put that information out there because with the Yurt Radio Show, we have many different listeners that are listening to the show. Not all listeners are Hampshire students. Sometimes we get Mount Holyoke and we get Smith students that's listening to it as well. So when you have those numbers out there, they know, they're familiar with the central dispatch for their specific campus, and they know what number that they can call. All of those numbers go to one place. It goes right to dispatch, and they can reach the detectives if you ever need them. So that's really good information to have. So we really appreciate having the guest on the show today, Detective Sergeant Kevin Fournier and Detective Matt Weller. A lot of good information. And in the future, we will be bringing the detectives back again to join the show, maybe with some other topics and information that they want to share with the community. At any time, you can send an email to the outreach department, which it comes to myself, Officer Earl Brown. You can send me an email, embps@hampshire.edu. If you have any questions for the detectives, I'll make sure I forward that information right over to them. Also, they left their phone numbers. You can also call them if you have any questions or concerns. You can also reach the detectives if you have questions, if you want to talk to your house directors in your area, if you want to communicate with your interns. And, you know, you have a lot of resources and people that you can reach out to, and they have access to the campus police. You can stop us at any time or talk to any one of those individuals, and they can assist you. So again, if you have any questions, just reach out to us. We will be following up next month with the next show, Campus Police Social Hour. We do the show once a month, and we bring a lot of interesting information, and we try to bring new people on the show to join us as well to share information that they have in their areas. One thing that we did not cover at the beginning of the show, because we started the show a little bit late, we wanted to get right into it with this information. I wanted to put it out there. But we have Detective Matt Weller here. I want him to just tell you a little bit about himself. Last time Kevin was on the show, we had another detective that was working with him. Detective Weller is relatively new and is Detective Fournier's partner, pretty much doing the investigations on the campuses. I'd like him to talk just a little bit about himself, how long he's been at the department. And I'm sure many of you have probably seen him moving around campus, but it's good to know who the people are in the campus police department.
Thanks, Officer Brown. My name is Detective Matthew Weller. I've been with the department for a little over 2 years now. I first started off on patrol at Mount Holyoke College, second shift. I worked there for about a year and a half, and the detective position opened up. And so I ended up applying for it and was accepted into the detective unit. And I've been there ever since July of 2012. So I've been there for about 7 months now. And I also have previous law enforcement experience. I used to work up at Old Orchard Beach in Maine. I've also been around with the Sheriff's Department. I've also been guest patrolled all over the campuses. So I'm very familiar with Hampshire College on a patrol level, as well as Smith College as a patrol level.
That's good. That's good. And I know many people have seen you. They probably don't see you as much because you're on patrol. But again, you know, the detectives, they deal with a lot of incidents and cases that involve more investigations. It takes more work involved than what patrol officers can really give during their patrol shifts. So this is where our investigators come in at. So they do a lot of good work and hard work for all three of the campuses. Detective Weller has been a really good asset to the detective division, working with Sergeant Detective Fournier. And guys are really accessible if you need them. And if you have any questions, you can always get in touch with them. Either you can call their line or call dispatch and leave a message, and they will return your calls. Again, you know, it's been a pleasure doing the show for the community. Again, if you have any questions, you can always reach out. Campus police call the main line, or you can call myself, Earl Brown. My office is located in the library on the second floor of the Johnson Library, room 207. So you can always stop by, knock on the door. As well, I move around all three campuses, so I do the community outreach. So if I'm not there, you can leave a message on my door, send me an email, and I'll follow up with you. So again, you know, thank you for joining the show. I'm going to take the show out with a little bit of music. But before I go, is there anything the detectives want to say? Is one last word on the way up?
No, I wanted to say, if you want to know what the statistics are on your particular campus, whether it be Hampshire, Smith, or Mount Holyoke, all you have to do is go on our website and click on the Cleary crime statistics, and it'll tell you exactly what we're doing. Everything that happens on campus by law has to be reported by the Cleary Act. We want you to go out there. We want you to stay safe, and call us when you need us. We're open 24 hours. And Matt's just shrugging his head saying, I can't believe he just said we're open 24 hours.
Here for your service. It's always a pleasure. So enjoy the music, and I'll see you next time. Same show, same place.
sucks.